Welcome to a Search Manufacturing ERP.com podcast. I'm Brenda Cole, Assistant Site Editor. Today we'll be learning some benefits, project strategies, and best practices for demand-driven manufacturing. To discuss this, we've called up Roddy Martin, Vice President and General Manager of the Value Chain Strategies Service at AMR Research. Roddy is knowledgeable in topics such as systems support to operations, IT, and manufacturing strategy. He was also a key contributor in the development of AMR's demand-driven supply chain model. Thank you for joining us today, Roddy.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with some background. Demand-driven means that the manufacturing process pulls from the retailer rather than pushing from the supplier in order to compress throughput or cash to cycle time. Do you agree with this? And are there any other benefits to demand-driven manufacturing?
Sure. That is largely right. Let me just position it slightly differently. Demand-driven is, in a sense, contrary to the way we've always worked manufacturing. So manufacturing has traditionally been driven inside out, so incentivized on economy of scale and manufacturing costs, produce product, and then sales and marketing moves product in the customer-facing process. Demand-driven flips that whole equation to outside in. And very easy to understand when you think about the retail-driven consumer electronics, consumer goods manufacturers. So in essence, demand-driven means responding to a demand signal or a demand forecast, an accurate demand forecast. And when you really understand the characteristics of demand, in other words, the customer and the buyers of products, being able to shape demand. So yes, what you say is largely true. It is about compressing cycle time. But what I want to get away from is the fact that this is just reacting fast to market changes in demand. That's only part of the scenario of demand-driven manufacturing. Now, the benefits to demand-driven manufacturing are actually quite significant because what we found, and from some of the goals that companies are articulating, certainly leaders in their respective industries, is that the supply chain transformation to, in a sense, connect the end-to-end business and drive value out of manufacturing and product supply capabilities is, in a sense, I won't say coming to a grinding halt, but certainly is being impacted by the ability of the product supply network to reliably support the demand-facing, customer-facing network. So the benefits to demand-driven manufacturing, when you really do have accurate demand forecast visibility and you do have a solid understanding of demand characteristics, if you then turn around to source from the product supply network, you can, in a sense, cut out a lot of complexity, cut out non-profitable products, non-profitable assets, and in fact reduce, as we hear companies talk, reduce their manufacturing costs over the next 5 to 10 years. And that's largely because most manufacturing companies, discrete and process-orientated, have 25-30% capacity lurking spare in their networks. The problem is you can't really get at it unless you take a systemic outside-in approach and view of manufacturing.
Now, what types of manufacturing organizations are turning to demand-driven manufacturing? What factors usually make a manufacturer decide to implement this technology?
Sure, obviously, as you can judge from what I've said, companies that are driven by consumer demand are obviously the most logical leaders in demand-driven manufacturing, end-to-end demand-driven value networks. So, for example, consumer electronics companies like the Nokias, the Samsungs, the Hewlett-Packards of the world. Then obviously in the consumer goods space, the Del Montes, the Procter & Gambles, the Cloroxes of the world, because it's very easy for them to measure the point of consumption. It's basically the retail shelf. So companies in the consumer-driven space have obviously moved a little faster because their understanding of demand is much better than an industrial company, especially if an industrial company is doing business-to-business supply. They're supplying to somebody who ultimately supplies to a manufacturer who puts something together that goes to an end user. That's obviously a little harder for them to get hold of demand visibility. So in a sense, when you ask the question about what factors drive a manufacturer to implement, it's really to drive value and growth out of the product supply business and eliminate complexity, get better utilization from a value point of view from the manufacturing product supply assets. That's really what drives companies. It's a connecting the dots across the end-to-end value network. You know, we've said for years it's about taking the demand from the customer's customer all the way back to the supplier's supplier. That's in essence what we're trying to do. And it's a growth strategy. I mean, you can't implement innovation, or you can, but it's very difficult to connect all the dots in innovation to get the kind of growth you need unless you're looking at that end-to-end value network from the customer all the way back. It's not what we think the customer wants. It's what the customer actually wants and whether we're responding and shaping that demand for our growth or not.
Are demand-driven manufacturing and lean manufacturing techniques related? Should an organization have strong lean methodology in place prior to beginning a demand-driven manufacturing initiative?
Absolutely. I mean, are they related? Yes. I mean, if you go into, you know, companies like Procter & Gamble, you'll see that the traditional inside-the-four-walls approach to lean is the start of their what they call the consumer-driven supply network. And this is the case with most companies, because what has lean allowed us to do, understanding flows and wastes and variability in manufacturing operations, and to get hold of those cycle times and those processes and flows and optimize them. I think what we've got to be very careful of, though, is that we don't constrain our lean thinking to the four walls of the manufacturing plant. Lean needs to be seen all the way from the customer, the user of our products, all the way down the network, the value network, down into product supply, not just inside the four walls. I mean, there's no reason why we aren't and shouldn't be leaning operations and processes all the way from a customer shelf in consumer goods or the ultimate user of a fighter jet or a Boeing all the way back down the system. So do companies have a strong lean methodology? Yes, absolutely yes. But I think too strong a methodology, not governed by the supply chain strategy from the outside in, can become a problem. And let me give you an example of a leading CPG company who, you know, was very driven by inside the four walls efficiency based on kind of lean and operations excellence capabilities. But as they really started to connect with demand and translate demand into their operations, they found that in the case of a stockout, they needed to respond very fast across the entire network. And so same day scheduled execution from the point of sensing demand changes or sensing an out of stock all the way back to fulfillment and manufacturing was important. So metrics change, and one doesn't want to optimize inside a plant and find that you've sub-optimized the end-to-end outside-in network.
Now, in the current economic climate, is the interest in demand-driven manufacturing increasing? Are there any types of organizations for which demand-driven manufacturing would not be appropriate?
Absolutely, it is increasing. And in fact, the economic situation has raised the visibility of certain issues, you know, to the point where it's actually driven an increase in demand-driven energy. And let's rationalize why that is. Well, when I'm pushing inventory into the supply chain, and all that inventory may not necessarily be profitable inventory. It may not be moving as fast. It may not be profitable. If suddenly, after I've pushed all this inventory out into the system, the consumer, customer demand falls away, then I sit with massive amounts of working capital inventory in the supply chain, which I may have to write off or sell at a discount, depending on what kind of company I am. So in today's economic climate, where we need to be very sensitive to any changes in market dynamics. So for today, we want the criteria of cash management and cash-to-cash cycles to be, you know, foremost in our decision-making priorities, and accurate demand forecasts are absolutely fundamental to be able to translate demand forecast fulfillment and profitable fulfillment into cash-to-cash cycles and cash management. In fact, very good story of a well-known consumer goods manufacturer changed their focus last year from a focus on energy and transportation costs, because as we know, that was the real focus, to a focus on cash management. And in 2 months towards the end of the year, gave $500 million back to the business because They focused on things like supplier synchronization, in other words, making demand data visible to suppliers so they were only delivering packaging material when it was needed, and they didn't have to pay out any cash to for stuff that was going to sit around as inventory. Now, in terms of companies for which demand-driven is not appropriate, nobody is outside of demand-driven opportunities. Even the folks who make, Boeing Jet, Boeing EADS, etc., who manufacture huge aircraft, the aerospace and defense, the industrial sector, all of them are demand-driven. The question is, it's a lot harder for an industrial company to understand what exactly is demand and how do I get hold of that demand data? How do I do accurate demand forecasts? I may be project-driven. Well, the net is that even those big industrial manufacturers, are building aircraft, building facilities, building their projects to deal with demand that's measured out there. And in fact, the better I have visibility of demand, the better I can manage my project resources to make sure that I'm optimizing cash to cash and cash management cycles. So the net is everybody is has an opportunity with demand driven. It's just a little slower with companies who sit three, four layers down the tiering of the value network to get to understand exactly how do I get visibility of demand and how do I leverage demand-driven.
So can you recommend any strategies for a manufacturer who is planning to create a demand-driven network? Are there any common mistakes that you've seen manufacturers make during this process?
Sure. I think that, when we boil down the core capabilities of the end-to-end value network, what we're talking about is four core capabilities. The first one is getting an accurate demand forecast, because if we don't have an accurate demand forecast, there's probably a good chance we're making stuff that's not profitable, that's not needed, that's going to sit around in the system for longer than it's needed. One tire manufacturer I spoke to said, they realized when they did the analysis that they were, making a demand-driven forecast to manufacturing on a daily basis for certain tires when the demand was only changing every 3 months. So, there's a classic example. So I think that the first core capability is getting an accurate demand forecast, partnering with customers, watching the shelf in the case of consumer goods and high-tech electronics, consumer electronics. The second core capability, and this is where strong manufacturing really plays a role, and that is reliable, predictable product supply. In other words, if we have an accurate demand forecast, then we need to be able to reliably make product to satisfy that requirement. So, of course, this is contract manufacturing, suppliers, manufacturing sites of your own, innovation, launching innovation, etc. That reliable product supply is a second very core capability. The third one is operationalizing innovation. We can have the best innovation in the world, but if we can't operationalize it and get it out to customers who are going to, in order to make money from it and grow from it, then it's, not worth anything. So operationalizing innovation, gearing our manufacturing sites to deal with scaling up innovation. Very good example of Boehringer Ingelheim, who acquired Roxane Pharmaceuticals, and they used some of the Roxane sites to, improve the stability of processes and prepare products for commercial launch before they pick them up and they, put them in other manufacturing sites around the world. And that's a very good example of commercializing and operationalizing innovation. Then the fourth core capability is, if we have a demand forecast that's accurate, if we're able to produce reliable supply, if we're operationalizing innovation, are we making the right trade-offs? Are we making trade-offs along the lines of profitability? Because we have to allocate resources to these things, and we don't want to be spending all our time on the 80% of accounts, only amount for 20% of our profitability. So making accurate trade-offs, balanced trade-offs for the business is a very, very important capability. Now, when you answer the question about, what common mistakes are there and what should manufacturers be focusing on, I would say, the two most important are getting that demand forecast accuracy up, and second of all, reliable product supply and getting the variability out of that product supply. And then from the point of view of the mistakes you can make, you know, don't try and just respond faster to changes in market demand. Yes, that's very important, but just responding fast with flexibility and agility, speed and lean, etc., is not necessarily what demand-driven, outside-in demand-driven is all about. So don't try and just make manufacturing faster or take more cycle times out. You may, in fact, be sub-optimizing your capabilities. The key is get cost to serve and profitability information, translate it from the customer all the way back down the network, and then decide what your priorities are in manufacturing. And until you've done that, you know, don't make any, you know, uneducated guesses unless you're pretty sure that they're going to make a real difference to the growth opportunities in the business.
And finally, what sort of software system should be in place in support of demand-driven manufacturing? Is a basic ERP system enough, or do manufacturers need more specialized software? And how does demand flow technology fit into this?
Well, and that's a great question because, you know, most manufacturers have spent billions of dollars implementing ERP systems that in essence are, you know, order to cash inside out focused. Now, that's not wrong. I mean, MRP and order to cash are very important processes. But when they're driven by a forecast, then, you know, we're missing the demand-driven opportunities. So the systems and technologies and the data management capabilities that companies need to really focus are on the demand side of the business. In other words, where is the profitability analysis? Where are the systems supporting sales and operations planning? Where are the analysis and models of systems that look at processes and the flow of demand data and events that are visible in the manufacturing operation as and when they occurred? Doesn't help to see a stock out 5 weeks after the time. Doesn't help to learn about promotions driven in consumer goods, you know, after we've stocked out of the product. So the real systems investments to be balanced need to take place on the demand side. And we see companies like Anheuser-Busch, Del Monte, Clorox spending time on demand visibility, demand signal repositories, cost to serve analysis, and that's very important. So those are, you know, applications on the demand side of the business. And I think in manufacturing, spending more time on not just execution technology like manufacturing execution systems or recipe management process control, it's really spending more time on information systems that help us understand where the continuous improvement opportunities are, where the gaps are in operations excellence, what's stopping us from delivering right first time, why are we not releasing batches that are to spec, why is it taking us in a pharmaceutical company 3 months to release batches where we should have picked up problems inside the batch, not, you know, 3 months after the batch was manufactured. So there are very specific examples of technologies that support this outside in. And I think demand flow technology is a fundamental. In other words, sensing demand, looking at the processes of making this demand flow visible across the organization. But just don't forget that this is not all about systems. Demand-driven is not a systems initiative. It's, in fact, a very sophisticated transformation of culture because the business has to think differently about how it's measuring success, how it's, you know, sharing demand data and customer data with the rest of the business. So culturally, there are huge opportunities to change the business. And we found that companies like P&G and Samsung and Apple that are really demand-driven are, in fact, led by their executives to become demand-driven. It's not something that's a technology or a supply chain project.
Great. Well, thank you again, Roddy.
Pleasure.
This concludes our podcast on demand-driven manufacturing. Thanks for joining us and have a great day.